you lose, I'm not joking, it's like somebody's died. It's painful, and it's painful for days and days.
If the manager gets sacked, and when he did get sacked, for example, Steven Gerrard, you're out the door. It's as simple as that. It's so cutthroat, isn't it?
When I stepped off it and I stepped away from it, I was like, oh my God. All of a sudden, you feel your nervous system drop and you're like...
Really? Alex Ferguson says this is one of his biggest regrets, you know.
Ben, if you'd have signed for Newcastle, you'd have been playing in a cup final on Sunday.
The amount of Instagram messages I've got, I've even had a few offers like recently where I could have gone and maybe done like short-term deals and stuff like that. When you were watching those penalties in that World Cup final, did you know how that final, the penalty shootout was going to play out?
If you see the difference between a Lloris and a Martinez, yeah, who do you think is going to save a penalty?
Yeah, exactly that. What did he say the celebrations were like afterwards?
Completely mental. There's people jumping off bridges trying to get on.
I saw it.
Mental.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Fozcast. Now, we have had some banging guests already this season, and it continues today because it's goalie talk. We are joined by world-class goalkeeper coach Neil Cutler. And it's not necessarily even like a Neil Cutler episode, Cuts, right? We're just going to talk goalkeeping. We're going to talk about the world that we live in. We'll talk about, I don't know, a bit of a retirement update, some of the goalies you've coached. We've got a unbelievable list of goalkeeper shirts above me, haven't we, Tom?
Lovely, yeah.
And
big boys.
And we're going to go through them and we're going to get your sort of, what's the word, impressions?
Is that what it is?
Your take on what these goalies are and why they are what they are, their strengths, their weaknesses, all that kind of stuff. So Neil Cutler, everybody, if you don't know who he is, like I say, world-class goalkeeper coach, been goalkeeper coach at Aston Villa, Emi Martinez, West Brom, Ben Foster.
And he's been on the podcast before, hasn't he?
And he has been on the podcast.
Yeah,
it was a good episode, that, actually,
really good.
Wasn't it?
Really good.
Like, deep diving goalkeeper talk.
Exactly right.
It's really nice, isn't
it?
Right, coming in. First shirt, who are we going to go for? Let's go this side. We've got Peter Cech up here, Cuts. Right, come on, let's deep dive on Peter Cech.
Have you seen, by the way, Peter Cech when he plays ice hockey?
Yes, I have.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I
How
know.
How good is he, by the way?
Do you reckon that is a transferable skill?
Yeah.
It has to be, hasn't it? Reactions and all that.
Yeah, he just holds his shape.
Oh, does he play in goal ice hockey?
Yeah, he does, yeah. All the gear.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, amazing.
Yeah.
Guy. But I reckon he's one of them guys that's good at everything.
Yeah, probably, yeah. He plays piano and all that kind
right.
of stuff.
He's one of these all-rounders, isn't he?
Yeah, he seems like a very calm, kind of meticulous, measured guy.
Yeah. So calm, so like in control.
Yeah,
I remember speaking to JT about him. And
John Terry, give a little sniff when you say that, by the way.
Sorry.
He dropped that down there.
Sorry, I did, yeah, sorry. Yeah, loved him. Just consistent.
Yeah.
So consistent. Never like when you'd see him make a mistake, like very rarely.
He is my all-time favourite Premier League goalkeeper.
All-time?
All-time Premier League goalkeeper. So I've got his shirt up there. So that is, we played him the season that he was retiring at Arsenal. He came to the dressing room. He came to our dressing room, and I was buzzing. I was so excited, right? He came to the dressing room, and he went, "Ben, can I have one of your shirts? Is that okay?" And I was like, "Peter Cech, mate, please, like as long as I can have one of yours, like that is for sure." And I knew, and he had already announced that he was retiring, so I went and got one of my shirts, and I said, "Like, mate, my all-time favorite Premier League goalkeeper signed it." And then he went and got a shirt in the meantime, and he's written a little note on it as well to say, like, to Fozzy, like it was. I was like, "Oh,
best
Peter,
wishes, top man,
yeah,
good luck,
what a goalie."
What made him your favorite, Ben?
I think it was some of the saves that he made, right? So if you cast your mind back to in his pomp at Chelsea, where, do you remember, I think it was the FA Cup match they played against Man United, and he made a save from Hernandez, I think it was. It's a goal. It has to be a goal. And somehow he manages to get hand on it, tip it over the bar, like claw it back, tip it over the bar. And he used to make saves like this all the time. But I think it's what you say, Cuts, about his calmness. You just knew what you were going to get from him, didn't you?
Exactly right. And the top end, top level.
Yeah.
You've got a goalie, you know, he's going to go out there and he's just going to be 8 out of 10 every single game.
Yeah.
Amazing. Actually.
I remember as well, back in the day when Chelsea signed him from, I think it was Rennes, wasn't it? It was someone like that. Man United were trying to sign him as well. Mm. And Alex Ferguson says this is one of his biggest regrets, you know, is when Schmeichel retired, they were looking for that next one. I think they went and got me instead. What a mistake at Jamaica. But anyway, they missed out on getting Peter Cech, and they were genuinely like interested in trying to buy him. But Chelsea stole in there, and my God, did they get a goalie for the next 15 years, didn't they?
What a goal.
Kind of like similar to Van der Sar in terms of, you know, that consistency and that level, calmness. I always rated him like kind of similar in the way they play.
I think he played football at the best time as well, because just towards the end of his career, like I say, when he got that move to Arsenal and then they started expecting him to be able to play the ball out from the back. That's not your game, Peter. That is not your game, Peter,
yeah, exactly,
is it?
Right.
Is that one? There's a one where they pass the ball back to him on his goal line, and he's gone to pass it out, and it's gone out for a corner. And I'm like, oh, this is horrible. But that gets in your head as a goalie, doesn't it?
Exactly right.
When you're being asked to do something like that.
The game has changed now, hasn't
massively.
It? And the way academies coach young goalkeepers now, and that's predominantly a big, big thing.
Yeah.
It's a huge thing.
It's one of the first things now, isn't it,
yeah,
really?
You've got to have all the tools. Yeah. You have to. It's a massive part of it.
Right, let's move on. Alisson Becker. Oh, wow. We're going from big name to big name. These are all match-worn shirts, by the way, I'm proud to say. And we just have them sort of hanging around the office or whatever. But Alisson Becker, give me a take on big Alisson.
I think he's actually player of the season this season.
For Liverpool?
For Liverpool.
Yeah.
I think he's actually player of the season.
I
it's
agree.
Had to be. I think Liverpool have been quarterback. I think they've conceded chances. I think he's had to be really, really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
I think he's been a lot busier than what people thought he would ever possibly 100%. Be for Liverpool, wouldn't he?
And, you know, you think about these big goalies. Yeah, they're good, but they're playing behind big teams and good defences.
Yeah.
Mate, he's been tested this
year.
He's stepped forward. He's looking
I need you to break down this. We spoke about it on the Football Fill-In earlier today. He's got... it's like he's came up with a new way of goalkeeping when it comes to these one-on-ones. Break it down for me.
First and foremost, his timing of when to come down the line and block is exceptional.
Yeah.
His speed down the line is very good. So what he does, basically, he keeps his shoulders level. He doesn't rotate. He doesn't drop out the way. He doesn't fall backwards.
Yeah.
He keeps everything level. He keeps his chin on the ball. He knows where the ball is at all times. And he just gets big blocks.
Yeah.
He reacts to the ball, you know, because he can, because he doesn't flinch.
No, he don't. He keeps his eyes on the ball.
His eyes on the ball, but his shoulders don't rotate. His head doesn't come away.
Surface area is massive.
Yeah. And he keeps low, you know. If you're going to get beat as a goalie, you want to get beat high, don't you?
Yeah, for sure,
getting it over you are slim.
I don't
want to get him through you. Don't get beat through you. I always used to say, it's like, don't get beat through you.
Keep it all in there.
Keep
but
everything
I think
close.
He gets to the most optimal height, right? It's like, say, it's that reading that certain situation. He's there at the right time.
Yeah.
Timing is incredible. But then to be at the optimal height with everything in the right place and keep your eyes on the ball, because it's human nature, isn't it? That
exactly
when somebody
right.
whacks a ball at you, you automatically sort of close your eyes or you'll turn your head. Or he keeps everything just focused on that ball.
But that comes from training. That's creating new logical patterns.
Yeah, it
do
is.
It over and over and over again, and then it just becomes natural.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
That is what he'll be doing in his club. He'll be training that day in, day out, and that becomes natural.
Yeah.
If you're not working on it,
you'll never do it.
This might sound like a daft question, right? But you talk about getting the ball smashed in your face and something like that, and not moving an inch. Is that something that like you do in training, i.e. just get 5 yards out as a young goalkeeper and just absolutely welly the ball? Like, as a younger goalkeeper.
Do you do sessions like this then?
As in like blocking?
Blocking and that.
Yeah, 100%. You have to, because it's a massive part of the game.
And you expect your goalies to just take it and wear it?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's a yes then.
It's part of the armoury. Your face is part of the armoury.
Yeah.
It's part of the block. You know, like we just spoke about, if you're going to move, that moves your whole body.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as you move your head, it moves your shoulders, and then it rotates your body, and then you're leaving a gap.
Wow.
So it's like that detail of not moving. I always say, keep your chin on the ball, hold your chest.
Yeah,
still.
Good
you're
way.
You're taking a few in the mush, clearly. Then Neil, not so much.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, look at that. Yeah, it's true though. Like for me as a goalie, whenever we've done it in training, not necessarily in training so much. Like I'm not trying to get one in the kipper or in the or in the winky or something like that. But
in the winky.
In the game, if you get one in the dish, if you get one splat in the middle of the face, right, from point blank range, that is as good as a world class save, isn't
100%.
It? Oh, you're buzzing.
But you're used to training balls now, you can use a lighter ball.
Oh, okay.
That helps.
Yeah.
You know, like, because you can just going to take it in the face.
Just to train you to keep you on it.
Yeah, it's a lighter ball that a lot of clubs use now.
Oh, mate, yeah. So, yeah, that's a genuine thing, by the way. We train to get one straight in the face, and so proud when it happens as well. I love it.
Next up then, so obviously Sir Alex Ferguson didn't get Petr Cech. But he did get the next guy, David De Gea.
Talk to me
Steely
about
was
David.
A big influence in De Gea coming across.
Yeah.
Wasn't he? I think Steely's been fantastic over the years, and he's kind of like a goalkeeping guru.
Steely. Yeah, yeah. He's self-proclaimed goalkeeper.
Go on, who are we talking about here? Sorry,
Eric Steele. Yeah, he calls himself the guru, or he'll like. I've trained with Steele at Man United, and if he hit like a lovely like right-footed or left-footed like service, or he would go, "Oh, what a service!" The save weren't bad, but what a strike! He would always do it. I think you're a dickhead.
But again, he's someone that's You know, I think even now, I think he's player of the season again.
Like, yeah.
Every year, so consistent. I think what he's starting to do now is protect the space a little bit better. Like, he's very much, you know, sits and protects the goal a lot. He's a shot stopper.
Yeah.
Not great in possession, but he does all
does
right.
Does a job, yeah.
But he's a shot stopper, you know. He's athletic, he's quick, he's agile. Just for me, needs to protect more of the space. Needs to take up better positions.
A bit braver.
Just braver in his head. But he doesn't, I don't think that's his game. I just don't think he likes doing it.
Yeah.
Because he's quick and athletic and agile. He protects the goal so well. And he's so calm. He's he's calm and...
I think David De Gea is, it sounds like, I was going to say niche, right? But what he's managed to do is he's found a niche of a club in Man United that works so well for him. Yeah. Honestly, so well that I don't think there's many goalies out there that will be able to do as good a job as what David De Gea does, you know?
So I'll tell you what he does, though. He hides the fact that he doesn't come for crosses.
Yeah.
Nobody would know it. So when you say, like, David De Gea is brilliant, is this, that, and the other, and a lot, like, I would say... Yeah, but doesn't his stats on coming for crosses are ridiculously low.
Yeah.
But nobody realises it. Because he just makes loads of saves, doesn't he? Like, but he won't come for the cross, but he'll save the header.
I think what he's managed to do, though, is find a way that works for him and the players in front of him. So I think the players know that he's not going to come for crosses.
Exactly right.
So then he's not caught making a mistake in those crosses. And like I say, this, when I say niche, what I mean is he's found what works. And it does work,
really,
doesn't
well.
It? Really, really well.
You don't get to that number of games.
No
that
chance.
That many player of the seasons and get these accolades that he's got without being very, very good at what he does.
Yeah.
That is what he does.
Will he work for Man United? Because obviously he's been one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League for what, 10 years. For Ten Hag, will he be the goalkeeper there in 2 years because of the style
that's
in which
a good
they
question.
Play?
That's a good question.
I don't think so. I think they are trying to sort a new contract, and I'm just not sure he'll be there in another couple of years.
Yeah. Is that a new contract for resale value, though?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly right. I think the way Man United want to play and the way they'll want to progress, can't see De Gea being that goalie.
No, I'm with you. I think, this is a really difficult one, this. I can see him signing a new two-year deal, but just so that they can sell him for 30 mil, maybe in a year's time or 6 months' time or something like that. But I do. I think sometimes it's better the devil, you know, when it comes to someone like a Manchester United goalkeeper, it is better the devil that you know than if you know you're going to get a 7.5 every single week from a David De Gea. Just give him a new contract and let him play and keep doing that.
Because what are you going to pay for a new goalie? Oh, 60, 70, 80,
nobody
million.
Wants to do that as well. Nobody wants to pay that money for a goalie.
They really don't. And the Man United need positions.
Yeah.
Other positions. They're going to pay money for other positions. And goalies, I don't think, is going to be one of them.
All right then, Neil, somebody you know very, very well in the final shirt up there. Big Emi Martinez. Talk to me about this guy.
It's difficult, obviously, because I've worked with him for a long time. I know all his attributes. I know what he's about. Just an unbelievable work ethic, a desire to achieve, a desire to win. Just like goes above and beyond. Like, he's just ruthless in everything he does.
Is
like,
he just wants more.
Just more. Oh. Like, I think because he is like a 30-year-old, 22, like a 20-year-old, 30-year-old. He's like not play games.
Yeah.
So he's not played games. So now all of a sudden he's thrust into the Premier League playing week in, week out. He's playing for Argentina.
Yeah.
So he's learning on his feet constantly, but he loves it and he wants more of it.
Does that mean then you would think that he's got so many more miles left in the tank that we still haven't probably even seen the best of Emi Martinez yet?
Because think emotionally what he's going through now. Right?
Yeah.
So he gets he's obviously had such an up and down upbringing in the game. Gone on loans, some loans haven't worked, some have worked. He's been told he's going to be number one for Arsenal and he's not, and it's not worked out.
Yeah.
All of a sudden he's coming into Aston Villa and he's just every other week, it's new to him.
Yeah.
Like, he wins a Copa America. It's like, oh my God, it's Argentina and he's like, it's the best thing ever. Like, then like another season, and he's got another season at Villa trying to replicate the first season, which he did amazingly well. And then you win the World Cup and it's like, literally like, it's like everything, because they're so passionate, aren't they?
Yeah,
South
they
Americans,
are,
Argentinians in particular. Well, like, that is this world.
That's one of the biggest things that could possibly happen
ever.
To an Argentinian, isn't
so
it?
So imagine, like, he's learning on his feet again, so then he has to win the World Cup and then go back to the Premier League like nothing's happened. Like, that's so difficult.
You called it. I remember you came on the Football Fill-In and we did some little predictions, and you said you called Argentina to win the World Cup.
Tell us a little bit,
because you had a little trip out there, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Miami. I think it was the last camp before the World Cup, and their togetherness and what they created as a group. You know, like music's playing, they're really, singing, they're dancing. That togetherness was huge and you could feel it.
Yeah.
You could actually feel like they go out training and they're having a laugh and a joke. But when training starts, like, boom. Like,
on it.
On it.
Wow.
On it.
And were you there just kind of watching and observing? What were you out there
for? Yeah, I was there to meet the goalie coach, who's a really good guy, to be fair. Martin Tocoli, I think his surname is. Very good, very detailed. Just to really... for the build-up for the World Cup, what he thought about Emmy, where he needed to be, and what I thought. I mean, our views were very similar, worked really well. So I just invited over really to have that, you know, that discussion and to see where he has and basically what he does when he's in that group and how he reacts in that group and, you know, like how he holds himself and he's like, he held himself differently
did
for
he?
Argentina than he did for Villa. Like, really? You see how, like, what proud, like, you could see him, like,
yeah,
came back to Villa and was a bit frustrated.
Yeah,
like didn't like. Well, was like it, kind of
the high of the World Cup, the emotion of being with Argentina. It's almost like a step down coming to the Premier
every
League.
Every time he went with Argentina and come back to Villa, it was like kind of you have to like get him back up again,
really,
because like, he gets frustrated with like other people.
Yeah, yeah,
and just getting just the focus was to get him to concentrate on himself and himself. Just that was it. Nobody else. Deal with yourself.
Because he's trying to help out too much. He's trying to help, tell everybody what to do and help them and put them in the right positions.
Yeah. Because he's that kind of person. Yeah. You know, like he's trying to like get everybody going and get everybody right.
How good is that detail, right? That Argentina and Emi Martinez and the goalie coach have gone, right, so let's get your goalie coach from England, from Aston Villa, to come over and we can all sit down in a room and we can talk about the best way to attack this World Cup.
That is
the tiny details that people just... that. People don't see that. People don't understand the amount of work and that goes
and
into that.
And it's a far cry from look at England over the years, where that relationship with the England national team has been one manager saying, don't play him in the League Cup. And then, that kind of relationship. So to have that cohesiveness between...
We even spoke about penalties as well. Like, he went to that detail where he was stepping linear to go lateral, like step forward to go sideways, instead of just diving, just stepping sideways. And it's something that we could then work on.
What? Because it slows his, how much he can cover.
You can't get power off your leading leg if it's going to go forward to go sideways, can you? So it's got to be that step sideways to dive sideways. You've got to get that little step to go. And you can't, and you watch now, right? The amount of goalies that step, their initial first step is forwards to then push sideways. And they're actually trying to power over their leg when it's too far away, it's too far forward.
Yeah,
and it's like a trait that a lot of goalies have,
and it cuts down the time as well. So
all you've got to do is get from there to there as quickly as you
possibly
can. Why
do they advance off the line? Why do they advance off the line? Because I watch football and I'll think to myself, one, why are you doing it? Because with the technology now, it's probably going to be pulled back.
Yeah,
and for that exact reason, surely you'd be better exploding either side.
This is a thing, right? So you want your first step has to be slightly forward because you can't get power just sideways, can you? And you can't get it too far forward, so it's got to be that happy medium. And if you dive too far forward, the power, the pace is going to beat you in it.
Yeah.
So you've basically got to get the optimum step, like that step has got to be
sort of diagonal,
slightly in front.
Yeah, sort of like what, 20 degrees or something, a 20 degree angle or something.
Think biomechanically, you've got to get your body weight over that leg as quickly as you possibly can and get a push like that. So if it's too far forward, you're not going to get your body weight over and you're not going to be able to push. So it's like the speed and what you've got to dip and dive is so quick, so quick.
When you were watching those penalties in that World Cup final, did you know how that final, the penalty shootout was going to play out?
I obviously knew that he would save some.
Yeah.
Because he always does, because of what he is and what he brings. And he's like, if you watch him, if you see the difference between a Lloris and a Martinez, who do you think is going to save a penalty?
Yeah, exactly that. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
And that's character and that's personality. And that's another thing that we delved into really, really deeply is how he holds himself on the pitch.
Uh-huh.
His personality. Whereas, and this was when he came back from Argentina quite a bit, he'd come back and he'd be within himself and he'd be like frustrated with everybody. It's like, no. You've got to bring your personality, your leadership skills, your experiences to the pitch. Show people what you're about. Yeah. Don't go inwards. Stay outwards.
Especially for a team like Villa, where they need everybody that's got that to show it.
Like, he cares so much, but he let that go in. Instead of care so much and show people you care.
Wow.
On the pitch, show people you care. And that was like kind of bring your personality to the pitch. So when that kind of went over to the penalty bit, you know, bring your personality to the penalties.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, don't Don't just stand there. What are you going to bring? What are you going to bring that's different?
When I saw them, when I saw the goalies lining up and they're standing up in the goal, I just knew that Argentina were going to win that penalty shootout.
He's like a caged animal.
Oh, he's a big man, a big, hairy, angry man, isn't
he?
Like,
he's a big dude, isn't
he? He's a big dude, mate.
Though, you can see how much that means to him.
Yeah.
It means everything. And he will do anything it possibly takes to keep that ball in net.
Yeah.
And he's just like... You see it in his eyes. He's like,
"What did he say?" The celebrations were like afterwards, bonkers,
mental. Completely mental. There's people jumping off. I know, bridges trying to get on.
I saw it.
Mental, completely mental.
Good session, yeah.
Oh, I would have thought he would have been.
Got one more for you, boys.
Yeah, come on, bring this one out.
Oh. I think underrated.
No, rightly highly rated. Yeah. Surely, yeah, very Pepe. Very highly rated.
Pepe Reina,
one of the best personalities in the game.
Really. So you got to work with Pepe at Aston Villa, didn't you?
What a guy. Really? And was one of the main reasons why we stayed in the league that season, because of his personality and his knowledge and his experience. But just like, he's just so open. Like, came in, Spanish goalie, like, come into, and really open to the way I work, and what's all that about? Like, you know.
Bought into it all.
Pepe Reina, why not? Just like, fully in.
Yeah.
Like, and open to all his stories and all his knowledge and all his experiences. Imagine like me, I'm like picking his brain.
Oh, heck yes, you would be, yeah.
Oh, so I can see it. So what was he all about? And like, all of like, just a top, top fella.
I love that. Pepe Reina, one of the best side volleys.
He bought the side volley over, I think.
He wasn't he? Yeah. He was one of the OGs that bought it over, weren't it?
Yeah.
Just an absolute weapon. He'd get it and just zing it out on this. Oh, it was so beautiful to watch.
How about that for a bit of GK chat to start?
Yeah, I know, it's lovely. As well, that is one of Pepe Reina's Lazio shirts. So he got in touch with me last season and basically sent me a message on Instagram saying, "Hi Ben, my kids love the cycling GK. Would it be possible for their birthdays, like next month, for you to send a couple shirts over?" I was like, "Yeah, for sure, mate." So got the names, wrote the names on it, and I went, "Mate, is there any chance you can send me one of your shirts as well? I'd love it. Like, but I love Pepe Reina anyway." And so he signed it to the cycling GK. Lots of love and best of luck, Pepe Reina. What a guy!
But he's so bought in, like in small sided games. You know, when you get the ball and you just throw it out. He would drop it every single time.
He wanted it at his feet to play with it.
Every single time. So he would just drop it and just run forward with it. Like, and then we got all our goalies to do it. Because how are you going to...
Yeah.
You're going to learn in possession under real pressure. Like, drop it and see what happens and what you're going to do. And like, have to see a picture really quickly, don't you?
Yeah. And in a five-a-side and six-a-side, it will drag one of their players out of position as well.
Around them.
Yeah, and if you can play around it and get out
amazing
from it, boom.
For us, like, just little things like that that he brought in.
I love that, man.
I got him to put in a couple of sessions as well, like, just to get his ideas and his thoughts and... Just really open and really good, like really positive.
Oh, Pepe, what a legend. Right, Tomasi, where are we going from here? That was some serious goalie chat, by the way.
Today is the 20th of February. This is going out on the 23rd of February. Ben, if you'd have signed for Newcastle, you'd have been playing in a cup final on Sunday.
The amount of Instagram messages I've got. Right, so just for a bit of context, by the way. So on Saturday evening, Newcastle were playing against Liverpool. Nick Pope got sent off. It's a horrible sending off as well. It's a comedy red card, honestly. He's come out, tried to dive header it about 40 yards out from goal, completely cocked up the header, ended up grabbing hold of the ball and pulling it in. It was painful watch, wasn't it, mate?
It's horrible, especially for someone that's had such a good season.
I know.
Feel for him, don't you?
Oh, for him so badly. But unfortunately, that means he's going to have to miss the Carabao Cup final now.
Dubravka
is cup-tied.
Right, so...
Carl Darlow's gone out on loan.
Yeah, so if Man United... No, who are they playing, sorry?
Man United.
Yeah, so if Man United win on Sunday, Dubravka gets a medal.
Oh my gosh, this is ridiculous.
For Newcastle, Dubravka gets a medal.
It's crazy.
This is ridiculous, isn't it?
And Karius will play as well. So you would have thought Karius or Gillespie. So Mark Gillespie's got a chance of playing as well. Either one of them two will play. But if it's Karius, I hope he does well. Like, I really hope he does well because he's had some ridicule after he's killed his career a little bit.
Massively killed his career.
And just for him, and like, he's still like a top pro, you know? He needs to just go in that game and do all right.
Thing with Karius is you can tell he's a top goalie. He's a top goalie. I've seen training sessions with him. He's a proper goalie, yeah?
Yeah.
I think what's happened in that Champions League final a few years ago has mentally scarred him probably for life, wasn't it? Because he had such a downturn after that game and it really affected him, didn't it?
I think he was inconsistent a little bit before that.
Yeah.
You know, like getting used to the Premier League, the biggest league in the world. So it wasn't easy for him. He was quite young at the time, wasn't he? Inexperienced. And mistakes are going to happen. Mm. Obviously he's made these mistakes in the biggest time.
In the biggest stage as well.
And hopefully he does well and it resurrects his career a little bit.
Yeah, we're in Karius's camp here. But yeah, I say if I would have signed for Newcastle at the start of the season, then I don't know. There would have been a chance anyway. Go for the treble.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're having a bit of footy chat now. Obviously we're in kind of February now, so I want to have a little chat about retirement and how you're finding it.
Okay.
Do you miss it? And then obviously want to chat to Neil about when he retired. So.
Yeah, I want to find out about your retirement as well, actually. Am I missing it? God, no. No, heck no. I do not miss anything about going into training every day, training, and then even the matches. I thought I'd miss the matches. I thought I'd miss the buzz of it because I am a match player and I buzz off that adrenaline at 3 o'clock. But do you know what I don't miss is the... It got so sort of, towards the end of it, that it got so sort of, I could see the pressure on people, yeah? I could see that it was always a bit, it would take its toll on people. And I didn't enjoy watching people genuinely say, just can't wait till the game's over. Just can't wait till the game's over. And that's kind of the way that it started going. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not really enjoying this anymore. Do you know what I mean? And when you start losing that buzz on the match day, I think that was what forced me to go off.
I think you're quite empathetic as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like you care about genuinely about people. Yeah. And you can see it. And I see it with managers and I see it with coaches a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a toll, you know. It's a highly pressurized industry that you're in. And you lose a few games, you're like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
Get the sack here.
But this is, you've seen it from that side as well, Kutz, where you know that you were at Aston Villa and you're, honestly, I'm not blowing smoke at your ass here, you're one of the best goalkeeper coaches in the world. Yeah, you are, right? He's smirking, he knows it as well. Scumbag.
Yeah, I am.
But genuinely, he is. He's one of the best goalkeeper coaches in the world. Certainly the best I've worked with alongside maybe Dave Watson. But you, being that high calibre of what you are, know that if the manager gets sacked, and when he did get sacked, for example, Steven Gerrard, you're out the door. It's as simple as that. It's so cutthroat, isn't it?
100% it is. And my problem is, and I'm quite empathetic as well, I give everything. So I've got, when I'm in a job and I'm like, I'm giving everything I've got.
Yeah.
And it's like and it just goes. Like you've given, like for Villa, give it everything for 4 years. You've developed a philosophy all through the phases. Everything's going all right. There's goalies coming through. They're all internationals. Emmy's flying. He wins the World Cup. It's like nothing.
Yeah.
Like you just, now you've got it.
Forget it, yeah.
It's gone. And to be fair, when I stepped off it and I stepped away from it, I kind of like, I was like, oh my God. Like, don't realise how intense.
Yeah.
And I needed it.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, you feel your nervous system drop and you're like,
really?
I think I needed that break.
Yeah,
don't realise when you're in at the time and you're like,
you live it, don't you? You live it so much, yeah. Like at any moment of any time.
When you lose, I'm not joking, it's like somebody's died.
Yeah, it's painful, yeah.
It's painful, and it's painful for days and days. Like, and then like all of a sudden you're picking up towards the next game, but the atmosphere around the place is hard to get going. You're coming the day after a defeat and you're like, right, we need to get people going here. We need to like ramp it up a little bit because you can feel the atmosphere when you come in the training ground. It's like,
it's exactly that. This is my problem was towards the end of when I retired, basically, was that everybody's mood was dictated by that result on the Saturday. So if we had won on the Saturday, everybody's giddy and everybody's happy all week long and training's fantastic and everyone's having a nice time. But we just got relegated at Watford last season. So virtually every Monday, you knew that it was going to be a miserable kind of like, horrible. Oh my God, we're going to get relegated and players' money's going to get cut and all this kind of stuff. And that's what really left a bit of a bad taste in my mouth, to be perfectly honest, was that everybody just getting dictated by it, and it was horrible.
You know, so you've got to create an atmosphere, though, and create, like, if you're a manager, like the top managers have to create that emotional baseline where you have to try and push the fact that win, lose, and draw, you've got to stay on that baseline, because a lot of managers are like that.
Yeah,
and it's like, you got Dean Smith was the best ever.
Was he really?
Best
just
ever.
Keeping it straight.
Same person, win, lose, or draw, same personality. Like, so open, and like he could say anything or do anything, just like, fine, no problems. Even if you lose, come in, like smiling.
Yeah, yeah.
Not, nobody's died.
It shouldn't change anything, should it? It shouldn't change whether you win, lose, or draw.
You're going to lose games.
Yeah. As long as you've set your levels and limits of what you expect from people, and as long as people are delivering on them, then it should just stay the same, because they should even itself out, shouldn't it?
What?
The problem we had at Watford, sorry, quickly, Tom, is that the manager was in charge for about 5 or 6 weeks, and then there would be a new one.
Literally, what I was going to ask you, that was going to be my question, was when the new managers came in at the rate they did at Watford, was the kind of mentality like, here we go again?
Yeah, a little bit. It was. It was genuinely, you knew the writing was on the wall for the managers. So once it got to a certain point of he would lose 3 or 4, and as soon as there was a bit of a rumour of, cool, if he loses on Saturday, he's getting sacked. You knew what was coming. Honestly, you genuinely knew what was coming.
The players feel that.
Oh, the players feel it. Yeah, they feel it.
And then momentum starts. And once you get that momentum of losing games, so difficult to get
out of it. Yeah.
Do they lose a bit of respect or credibility for the manager, though? Because, like, will certain players kind of go, well, he's going to be gone in 2 weeks, so actually I'm not that bothered what he says?
I wouldn't say they necessarily do it so outwardly and openly, but I think like subconsciously, yeah, human nature, they will just dip a little bit. They won't sort of do that last gas tackle that might get them injured, but it might block a goal at the same time. They will just, and I even seen players, like, when it gets so negative and toxic and bad and the results are so bad, that players are really happy to have injuries, genuinely. Like, they're so happy to have an injury because then they're out of the firing line and they've got a legitimate excuse as well. But then that injury that could be a 2-weeker turns into a 4-weeker, and they drag it out.
Yeah. We spoke about this earlier, didn't we, about a lot of footballers are now more introverted than extroverted.
Yeah.
That's just the way society is, and that's the way it's going. So, you know, the introverts now, they need a certain person around them in order to get, you know, like, get them into game, get them ready for games and get them motivated in games. And if you're a shouty manager, it's like bawling and barking at them. They're like, they go inwards naturally.
Yeah. Nobody likes being shouted at, Kurt. I don't care
exactly
who you are.
Right, but and the same goes when you start losing games. These introverts will go within themselves and question themselves, and that's when you need good coaches and good managers around them to be able to get through that and out with that.
I've got a theory, lads. Right, listen to this, yeah? If I was a football chairman, a football owner, right? I own my own club. This is how I would run it, right? One of the rules would be you have to be at least 30 years old. Nobody younger than 30, all right? I don't want anybody under 30. I will have players on 2-year contracts maximum, yeah? And I would do the most hardcore due diligence of finding out about what that person is. The football bit, I'm not even worried about for a second, yeah?
they
have to have quality. It's obvious they have to have quality. But the overriding factor has to be what they are like as a human being, first and foremost. Massive. Right? And if I know they're a good egg and they mix well and they get on with people, they're talkative, they're funny, they're blah, 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 and they do it properly, yeah? They will do it properly. You've got a chance of playing for my football team, right? And then when you get that many players like that, right, I think you will stay up season after season after season. Watch what Sean Dyche does at Everton now. Watch what Sean Dyche does, yeah? This is how he's built his whole career. He literally goes around and goes, what's he like as a player? What's he like as a person, first and foremost? And then that's it. It'll go from there. And that's all I'd do. Because as well, for me, so at Chelsea at the minute, they've got this mad thing of giving players 8.5-year contracts. I think if you give an 8.5-year contract to a 21-year-old kid on 150 grand a week, you are just asking
he's
for
now
it.
Multi-millionaire, and his work ethic's naturally just going to be more
exactly.
Relaxed.
He might be an 8 one week, he'll be a 2 the next week, and you'll disappear and he'll miss out and all this kind of stuff. But if you have a 30-year-old player who knows that he's only got a 2-year contract and he has to keep playing for his next contract, yeah, he will continuously, reliably give you the best he's got every single week. And that's all I'll ask of my players. And I think you'd do an absolutely incredible job with this team.
I think Chelsea used to do that in the past, didn't they?
Yeah.
If anybody at 30 and would just give 1-year contract.
1 year, 2 year deal,
like,
match,
a lot
yeah.
of the players were around that age.
Didn't Arsenal do that? Didn't Wenger have that
policy?
Didn't
he? Sort of
One year only. Yeah. I think he lost a couple as a result of it, but
still, you know what you're going to get from these older players,
don't
you?
But then the other side of the thing is, are you going to get these players in if you're not offering them these big contracts?
Yeah, true that, but...
Do you know what I mean? It's like, you're going to have to...
It's a hard one, it's a tough one, but if they know they're joining a team where it's done properly and there ain't going to be the dickheads, because you know what it's like, you probably saw it towards the end of your career, I see it towards the end of my career, the amount of young kids that come through that don't really have any respect for anyone or anything, and they just toss it off and they do what they want and the culture's not there, and you just think, I'm just fighting a losing battle here all
the
time.
Culture is the word.
Yeah, the culture
you create. And I think that a football club has to create a culture no matter what manager comes in.
Yeah.
You've got to create that culture where you are developing these people as people. know, to be good people. The work ethic is spot on and they're driven and they're motivated. You've got that culture. It doesn't matter what manager comes in because the culture should stay exactly the same moving forward. But it doesn't happen that way. A new manager comes in, got his own culture and his own way, and then he gets a sack or leaves after two or three. Another manager comes in, different culture, different way, and the club's doing that constantly.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's so interesting when you watch these all or nothing documentaries. Yeah. And obviously, they'll only show you what they want you to see.
Yeah.
But that's
you do
what,
get a taste for it at least.
Oh, you do. Yeah. And it's even like the ones I found was with Edu at Arsenal.
Yeah.
Like, what is he, the sporting director or technical director? And seeing him getting in amongst the lads and how he deals with Mikel Arteta, I thought it was fascinating
great
stuff.
Insight.
Yeah, but to answer your question, no, I do not miss, honestly, not miss one thing about football. I've even had a few offers like recently where I could have gone and maybe done like short-term deals and stuff like that. And I don't know if I've ever really fancied it, to be perfectly honest with you.
Just before you came back in the room, Ben left the old pod mics at home, didn't you? So yeah. we did an emergency trip back home, and me and Cuts were talking before you came in and said, let's say a team came in for you tomorrow, right? And you needed to play the next Premier League game. I said to Cuts, how could you, you haven't played a football match for 10, 11 months.
Yeah.
Could you just come straight back in and could you just explain again what you said to me, Cuts?
I think you do it easily.
Yeah.
Because you are a game player.
What does that mean?
You love the game. It comes to life in a game. It doesn't need to train.
Yeah.
It does not need to train.
I think I'd be sweet, mate. Yeah. I do, honestly.
Because of his personality and the way he brings himself out, the way he plays the game itself, he wouldn't need to train that much.
Would the rest of it be there, the muscle memory?
Exactly right. Don't get me wrong. There's not many that could do that.
Yeah.
Hardly any. But you're a game player, aren't
you? Yeah, I loved it.
Game day, just like, ready, gone, done.
It's that adrenaline boost, mate. Once the game starts, right? Even like an hour before kickoff, like, I still haven't got the adrenaline boost yet. But it's when the game kicks off, the 3 o'clock, that whistle goes, oh, where we go, lads. Like goosebumps, like hair stands on end. And it's the adrenaline courses through your body and it does stuff to me and to other people as well that you just can't do in the week. Like you ain't got this energy. You can't jump so far. You can't kick it as far. And
with your experiences and knowledge of the game anyway, how many games you played?
Over 400.
You've got all that experience and all that knowledge, like, just go and play the game.
I know. I think
so. If anybody wants Ben, he's available on a game-by-game basis.
Oh, I'd be so stiff the next day. Honestly, I'd be so stiff, like, kicking and that, like that. Yeah. The odd bits and bobs I've done lately, like, recently, I've been doing videos with this and that. And, like, even just kicking 7 or 8 balls or whatever, honestly, mate, I'm waking up the next day, my thighs are almost ripped to bits, my groin's tight as you like. I'm thinking, this is miserable.
Do you reflect back on your career? Like, even now, obviously, it's still very recent, but like as your pal, and I look back and think you didn't quite get the send off that you deserved, and what made me realise that is when we did Mark Noble a couple of weeks ago, doing the research, watching everything, and Mark got like the fairy tale send off, apart from the last game being at home, which it wasn't, but he got the last home game speech and everything. You didn't get that, did you?
At Watford?
Yeah.
No, I did get that at Watford.
Because I think if you'd have stayed at West Brom, then...
I think it kind of ended a little bit bitterly, really, between me and Watford. You know, I think I'd like to think that if you ask any of the lads, you know, what's Ben like, they'd all give me a glowing reference and say, oh, I love him, he's a good lad and he does it properly and he's professional. But I think the club just didn't see it that way, really. Obviously, I think with a bit of the, you know, the Cycling GK thing might have got in their heads a little bit. But yeah, it was a bit of a shame, really, because the second to last game of the season was at home to Leicester. And my last ever game in English football was a 4-1 pumping by Leicester. We got absolutely battered, yeah? We did, we got pumped. But then the following week, we were playing Chelsea, away at Chelsea on the Sunday, last game of the season. And so I'm thinking, right, I'm probably going to be retiring at the end of the season anyway. So I'm thinking it's my last ever away trip with the lads. It'll be really nice to travel with them, and do you know what I mean? And it'll be just really nice. And then I got told quite early in the week that I'm not going to be playing on the Sunday. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. It's not a problem.
You've been playing most of the season.
Yeah, I've been playing most of the season. But Dan Batman is going to come in and play. And then I knew that Dan obviously is going to be the number one goalie next season in the Championship for Watford. So I was like, yeah, it's cool. Not a problem. I totally get it. I understand it. But it wasn't until the Friday that they said, and we don't want you to travel with the team either. And I was like, what do you mean? Why not? Why not? Can't I travel with the team? Do you know what I mean? I'm probably going to be retiring. It'd be nice if I can have, you know, just have my last word and, you know, have a bit of a nice time with the lads. And they was like, no, I think you'll be a distraction. And I was like, what?
That's not you.
What on earth are you on about? A distraction? I'm never a distraction. You know what I mean? I enjoy being with the lads. The lads enjoy being with me. Because I think what I got really good at towards the end, even if I was playing or if I wasn't playing, I was a bit like, I was a bit of a cheerleader anyway. So like, because we've got a younger squad and some of them, like you say, they're introverted players. Mm. You need to have somebody who's talkative around the place and gets people like the glue. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Gets people talking and chatting. Yeah, yeah. So I would be that guy anyway. But yeah, they would, no, we don't want you to travel. So like I say, it was Chelsea away. So I was thinking, well, I want to go out Sunday night with the lads as well. Like the lads were planning, because it's always a done thing. Like after the last game of the season, you all go out for a few beers and say goodbye for the summer and everybody goes their own way. So I was like, well, I'm going out with the lads on Sunday, so I'll go to the game, yeah? Just so happens that one of my good friends is a Chelsea fan, like a big Chelsea fan as well. He's got some like corporate tickets, like where you get a bit of food and stuff beforehand. And he's like, oh, I've got a couple spare tickets. You can come and sit with me if you want in the Chelsea bit. I was like, yeah.
As if. As if he's getting a ticket off his mate to go and watch his own team. Yeah. Fucking so, shambles.
So I was like, all right, sweet. I'll just come and sit with you lot then in the Chelsea bit. So anyway, it was a baking hot day. It was like, sun was beaming down. Everyone got sunburnt actually just sitting there watching the football. But the Watford fans were sort of over in there and I was by the side here. And some of the Watford fans must have saw me sitting in the Chelsea end, yeah. Oh mate, I got pelters. With honestly, a pint. I got absolute pelters. Like Adam singing,
hammered, didn't you?
Adam singing like Foster is a whatever sort of thing, yeah. And then on Twitter and all that kind of stuff afterwards saying, oh, it's a shambles, Foster's sitting with the Chelsea fans, he wants Chelsea to win. I'm thinking, no, I didn't have a ticket, I wasn't invited, I only came because, like, do you know what I mean, I wanted to watch the lads on the final day and I'm going out with them afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, you didn't do much for the club, did you? So
that's what I mean. So it was a bit of a shame.
Do you know what I mean?
It was a bit of a shame. I don't, it doesn't bother me though. I still like Watford. I'll always like Watford. I'll always watch out for Watford. Actually, funnily enough, speaking tonight, there's it's two of my former teams tonight.
Big game tonight.
West Brom at home against Watford tonight,
big
that
game.
Is. So we were going to go, and I can't get tickets. I swear on my life. So I don't want to go, and I want to look impartial because I love both of these teams. Yeah, I do. I love them both. So I want to look impartial. So I didn't know whether to sit in the Watford end or with the West Brom end. So anyway, I know I can get Watford tickets because some of the lads have already texted me and said, like, if you want to come, I can sort you out some tickets. But I thought maybe I should sit in the West Brom bit and just, like, you know what I mean? It's West Brom at home. Anyway, I text the secretary at West Brom and said, any chance of getting a few tickets? I want to take my son, you know. And she was like, I'm so sorry, we ain't got nothing left, like it's fully sold out. And I'm thinking, oh great, so sorry, I'm gonna go to the pub anyway and watch it.
Wow, that's amazing. What about you, Cuts, when you retired? Because what are you, about 34 when you retired?
No, I was younger than that.
Were you younger
29
than that?
Yeah, my my back was just horrific.
Was it? Yeah, you always struggled with your back, didn't you?
Shocking. Yeah. So last year at Rotherham I was like getting injections in my back and just getting through games, like stiffening. Like I get half time, I think, oh, it's all right. Yeah, get up to half time. Half time comes and my back would just go.
What, from sitting down?
Just stopping. And like I'd just struggle. Second half of games, massive struggle. And then I'd be out for a few days after that. Like, and it was just like, I can't do it anymore.
Was it a relief when you?
Yeah, massive relief. And from the age of like 25, 26, I knew where I wanted to head. I knew the direction I wanted to go in. I wanted to be a coach and I wanted to go and I had my own philosophy. I knew exactly the direction, you know, where I was going to head. And luckily, Alan Neil, who was the manager at Rotherham the year before, got the sack and he went to Bury. And then the year after when I retired, I went to Bury with Alan Neil. So that was a great little...
Is it an easy process, is it, to go from sort of playing to know you're going straight into the coaching side of it? So had you already done all the badges? Is that something you had to learn?
Yeah, I started it, but it's still difficult and different. Even like, and I talk about John Terry again, but even like massive players like that, when they go from playing to coaching, find it difficult. It's completely different.
Yeah.
You know, like the obviously the spotlight's on you. It's an individual thing. You've got to then put the session on. It's like the detail you have to go into in order to do that. It's like, it's different, completely different. I loved it. I loved everything about it from the start. Like, and I just like, I'm a scholar of the position. I love everything about it. Yeah. So I just gave it everything. I was doing the academy at Wolves at the time. I was going into Hereford, I was going into Bury, and then went full-time at Bury and then just went up from there.
So I went to St George's Park a few weeks back. So England 21s basically manager got in touch, and the goalie coaches, Tim Dittmer, and they basically said, can you come in for basically a session with a young goalkeeper? So the goalies ranging from 18 to 21, the best sort of basically the 12 sort of basically the best goalkeepers in the country, and just sort of watch a session. You can get involved a little bit. We'll do a bit of a Q&A, we'll do a this and that. So I was like, yeah, sweet, looking forward to it, buzzing. So I turned up, had a lovely day with them. But then we went into a room, and there was a bunch of goalie coaches there who were also there to sort of watch and learn and stuff. And Cuts was in the room, and I was thinking, what on earth are you doing here, mate? So why do you have to still do that, and what is that about?
To be fair, I was asked to go in.
Yeah.
And it's always good to see different ideas, different thoughts, and to be fair, that they should be the best, the future of England goalkeeping. Yeah. They should be the ones where you're thinking, you know, the future's bright here. We've got some really good young goalies. Yeah. We have, to be fair.
Yeah.
And they're all like athletes, weren't they?
They are.
Big
oh, my
boys,
gosh.
Big athletic boys. But you've got to keep learning. You've got to, just because I'm out of work now doesn't mean it stops. You've got to keep continuing to learn, to step forward, to keep seeing different ideas, different thoughts. You know, I'm not the be-all and end-all. I'm not the...
You got to keep moving with it.
Have to keep learning. You know, like the game keeps progressing.
It was all right though, to be fair, wasn't it? The kids were brilliant as well, weren't they?
Some great kids.
Yeah, it was. It was great. Really enjoyed it.
What about the routine of being a footballer? And this one, obviously, you've been coaching and relatively recently are not coaching. But with you, Ben, you've come from, because I've got my own perspective on you almost, because you've gone from having a routine to having a very different routine.
Yeah.
So be here at 9 o'clock for training, do their match day, be here at this time. And I think when we have a really busy week, it suits you really well.
I prefer it.
Because you'll get the schedule for the week and you'll go, right, I've got to be here at 9 Monday, Tuesday, blah, blah, blah. When we have a quieter week, I think you're at a bit of a loose end.
I do. I get stir crazy, mate. I have to go and do something. This is why we've taken up golf, because it takes up so much of my time. Honestly, I'm not even joking. I have to do something. I cannot wake up and just sit in the house and watch telly.
Exactly right.
I have to go gym. I have to do whatever it is. Food shop. I'll go and do food shopping or whatever, right? I just have to keep busy and always doing something. But when you, like, footballer is a little bit like being in the army. You are waiting to be told where to be at what time and what you need, aren't you?
Definitely
That's how it works. So how are you with that in the last sort of whatever, 6 months? And
I have to get up and go to the gym first thing in the morning. Yeah. I have to do it. So I'm there by half eight every single day.
Nice, yeah.
Because I know I need that routine.
Yeah.
So then I'll come back, I'll have an hour in the house, and I'll go and take the dog for an hour.
Yeah.
Now that routine, I can't not have a routine. I just can't lounge about the house.
Mate,
can't
weather's
do it.
Getting better. You can start getting on the bike soon.
I've done a little bit
on
the bike last couple of weeks, yeah. That I have to have it.
Yeah.
I can't not do it. I'm not one that just sit around the house.
I think, what I learned a lot from actually is lockdown. So when lockdown first happened and football just got cancelled for like 3 or 4 months or whatever it was, right? I remember the very first 2 weeks of lockdown, and I had, so the reason why I do a lot of cycling and a lot of like gym work and stuff is because I know deep down it benefits my football. So it would make me, it makes me a stronger, better, whatever. It will prolong my career, all that kind of stuff. And then when lockdown happened and there was no definitive answer or no sort of end in sight of when this was going to end and when we were going to be back to football, I had this like mad thing come over me where I'm thinking, I just don't want to go and get in the gym. I don't know why am I doing it? I've got nothing to train for. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I had a real wobble for a couple of weeks of thinking, I hate this. I hate not having structure or knowing what to do. And it genuinely took me the best part of 2 weeks of going, right, plan your day or plan your week or whatever, plan a few things so that you've got something to focus on and look for. And so I think I learned so much of that from lockdown that when I did retire at the end of the season, we're busy as you like doing stuff anyway, so there's always stuff to do, but I will always have to fill my day with something. So I'm already thinking, like, we've got a shoot on Wednesday. Tomorrow I've got pretty much nothing on. I'm going to go and play golf in the morning, right? Because I know by the time 1 o'clock comes, I'll have finished my 18 holes, and then it's like almost getting ready to pick the kids up and stuff like that. So I just, I buzz off being busy.
When you have a quiet week, though, it's almost like you are going to go, I've got a free day here, so I'll do everything.
Yeah.
And he comes in the office, and we call it Hurricane Foster, and he'll come in the office and it'll be bam, 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 I'm going to do this, da, da, da. And then he leaves the office and you kind of go, Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's kind of like being a footballer, because being a footballer, you get one day off, right? And what happens on that one day off, you go, I've got to fit everything in that one day.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. You go, like, I've got to do this, and this, before you know it, days off, gone, and you get back in work and the next day. And it's the same, you know, at the end of the season, you get like 5 or 6 weeks off.
Yeah.
You are cramming.
Yeah.
Everything
holidays.
Everything you possibly can. Yeah. Does it feel like a rest because you've just gone boom, boom, boom.
But to be fair, even by the end of the summer, you get to the point where you're going, when are we back in? I want to be back in. We're back in next week. And you kind of dread it, but buzz off it at the same time because you know pre-season training is going to be coming and it's going to be horrible and hard and long and tiring, but you kind of want it still. Do you know what I mean?
And what about the dressing room? Do you miss the dressing room dynamic of just seeing your mates every day?
Yeah, that was one of my favourite parts of my career, is going into the dressing room and seeing the lads and just chatting absolute shit, because they do, and they keep you young about it a bit as well, don't they? It's like some of the sayings I learned from last year, some of the stuff they say, it's outrageous, isn't it? Some of the lingo they use is brutal. Like young Jamie, he uses all of them. Yeah. Lengting, like you're always, Jamie went out on Saturday, you're looking for some lengting.
Well, isn't that where we live, Leamington?
Lengting. I find that like with coaches as well, because it's such like, you get so close to other coaches because, like, you've got to win games.
Yeah.
Like, you get, like, that real
like your brother.
Close, like your brother, yeah. Yeah. Like, Aaron Danks became, like, really close with him because of, you know, like, we were together, obviously, with Dean, and then we're together with Steve. And, like, you just get that
bond.
That bond.
Yeah, it's nice, though, that, isn't it?
Games,
yeah, it is nice.
More than I think that they ever did when I was a player.
Yeah.
I think you're under more pressure as a coach.
As a coach, I totally agree. I think this is one of the reasons why I had no interest in going into coaching, genuinely, because I think it's you to be a coach and to be a manager or whatever, you have to be very professional and very dedicated. And Kutch is that guy to a T, by the way, the most dedicated I've seen. He lives it, he embodies all of it, right? But that is the bit for me where I think, having stepped away from it for a few months, it's only now I realize how intense it all is and how involved you have to be and how all consuming it is. It's so, like, football is so unsociable. It is. It's so unsociable. You can never commit to doing anything because there'll be something that comes up with football where you can't make it anyway, and it just takes over your life.
Yeah. And this is why it is, we always say it's a cool job. It's probably the best job in the world,
wicked,
right?
Yeah,
however, it is a job.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And we have it now. Like, I think we did it, was it Christmas? I think it wasn't Christmas this year. No, it was Christmas this year when we did the World Cups and stuff. And like, we had all the watch-alongs, lots of content churning out. And then we stop and we had a few days off over Christmas.
Whew.
And you just kind of go, oh, and you just kind of sag and go,
yeah.
Oh man, I just need a few days. But it's the same. You've experienced that now, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is what, so now you're a working guy.
Hello.
How do you find, question for both of you, weekends? They're like a thing for you.
Talk to me about your weekends at the minute then.
Like, I'm just feeling human again now.
Yeah.
You know, you start to feel human. You've got a weekend where you can just like do what you want to go where you want to go, drink what you want to drink.
Yeah, that's the one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And other people are there to share it with you, because I think one of the things which you realised, wasn't it? You were like, I'm going to play golf tomorrow. And you're like, I've got no one to play golf with.
I know.
Because it's not Saturday.
I know.
So you've fallen into this. Oh, I'm looking forward to the weekend because my mates are about. I'll go and have a couple of pints.
There's always someone to do something.
Yeah,
it's like when you were at school as a kid and you had an ill day off from school, and it's like, I want to go and do everything, but everyone's at school.
Yeah.
What's this all about? This is rubbish. I'm the same as you, then, mate. I love the weekends now. So
you can't beat sitting in a pub and watching.
No, it's class, isn't it?
You can't beat it.
I know. I'm looking forward to going to the pub tonight. So I know, like I say, it's West Brom Watford tonight. I am going to the pub and I will be taking my son. I'm going to take my mate and his son will come there. We'll get some, like, Chris. You'll get a pint. But even that, when you're playing football, you can't do that. Because if you're sat there on a Monday night with a pint in your hand and someone takes a picture of you, it will get sent to somewhere, it will come on Twitter, and then that's it. It's wildfire. It's just a bad look. So you've got to stay at home and you can't do those kind of things.
You'd be better off watching at home tonight. You're not going to get a minute's peace.
Nah.
Which pub are you going to?
I'm not. I'm putting a hat on. And we'll
it's going out Thursday anyway,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, we'll be sweeter than that, yeah.
I think we've got some quick fires for Neil, haven't we?
Okay, come on then, let's crack on. You've got the laptop in front of you. I got no quickfire today. I had no notes for this today, by the way, because
we've done all right, though.
We are so good at waffling, mate. That's all we need to do. Go, as soon as you start talking goalie stuff anyway,
I've
you're cooking.
I've got a new question on the quickfires.
Okay, go on then, dig in first. Go on.
Cuts, you're going on MasterChef tomorrow. Ooh. What's the speciality dish you're cooking?
I'm a bad chef, mate. I'm a bad chef.
Best you can cook forward. Something. You can cook one thing.
Don't say bolognese.
No, I do. I'm decent with pasta. I'm good at breakfast stuff, because when I go to the gym and I come back, Hungry. Wife will be out when I'm hungry and I have to eat right. So I'm really good at scrambled egg. Like I'm throwing all kinds of scrambled egg.
No, Master Chef.
I'm really good at scrambled egg. You just
no, but it, no. Getting scrambled egg right
that's
is
the breakfast of my choice. Right, I like a bit of scrambled egg, and I like a pasta. I like a nice pasta dish, but I'm just basic. You know, yeah, I'm not like a chef like you.
Yeah, so I like I'm it though. It's like mastering the classics, mastering the easy
basics.
Dishes. Yeah,
I do the basics.
It's not
really
an easy thing to do, you know. Yeah. Is to master the easy classics. Right.
And to be fair, now I'm off, I can improve on that.
Yeah. Cool.
Bucket list. Sorry. I think was I taking that one out of your mind?
Oh, yeah, go for it, mate.
So, as a spectator, your bucket list sporting event to go to.
Do you know what? I've never been to Wimbledon. I've never seen tennis. I've never been to see tennis live.
I'd love
to see tennis great live. I'd love to do that.
Okay, it's a wrong answer, but it's a good answer. Yeah. I'll take that. Yeah, the right answer is Augusta for the golf.
That's the right answer. See me play golf, mate.
No, but
if you did, you'd realise why I wouldn't say that.
It's a good answer, there, mate. I like it. What's the best football match you've ever seen live?
Ooh, live. I don't know. Best one I've been involved in was a playoff final, was the Championship playoff final, because that was just
against West Brom.
No, it was the Villa playoff final
against
Derby.
It was Derby. I hadn't had Derby.
That
there,
was
yeah.
just one of the best days of my life.
Yeah,
so that's probably the best game live.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was just like,
mate, I honestly think if you can guarantee a way to get promoted from the Championship League One, whatever, if you can guarantee it, to do it through the playoffs is just, it's the best, isn't it? I've done it twice and it is just phenomenal.
It's that feeling, like this season, people are kind of, with Newcastle next week, people are saying, like I've said to lads in the office the other day, we were saying, right, you can finish fourth or you finish fifth and win the League Cup. And surely as a Newcastle fan, after all these years, that feeling of winning a cup, and like as a football fan, like I remember going when you did Blues, and I wasn't a Blues fan, but it means everything. And that is going to be like in 30 years' time, they ain't going to go, remember in 2023 and we got into the Champions League? Yeah. It's not going to happen. But that day out at Wembley.
I remember we pulled at the hotel, right? And we worked our way around to get into Wembley, into the stadium. And the place was just full of Villa fans, like, and we had the music banging. And we're going through, it was like, I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about
it. Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
Amazing experience, like thousands and thousands of Villa fans.
To be fair, Villa fans are decent. When they get going, they make some noise, don't they?
Oh, place rocking.
Like, Birmingham Villa fans, obviously a bit better, but still, you know.
It's extremely not bad, mate.
Who's your idol growing up?
Growing up, do you know what? I love to watch Tim Flowers.
Yeah, nice, yeah.
Tim was
from
like
local lad.
Yeah, is he?
Yeah, local.
Tim
head,
was
yeah.
like, I used to think he was brilliant. Yeah. Like, his shape and the way he moved around a goal, and he's biomechanically, I'm a geek. But he's like, I used to think he was brilliant. Really had a lovely half volley on him.
I love this.
So he was kind of my idol growing up.
First crush? Teenage crush?
Celebrity crush.
Oh, celebrity crush growing up. I don't know.
How old are you now?
Oh, I tell you what it was. Do you know, like in the mornings, what was the program in the mornings when you went to school?
Big Breakfast.
Denise
Van Outen.
Yes.
Denise Van Outen.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
Her and, what's his name?
Paulie Yates.
Johnny Vaughan.
Yeah.
And it was someone else before him, wasn't there? Anyway.
Yeah. It was good, though, yeah.
Paulie Yates was.
Oh, Paulie Yates, winner, yeah. She was lovely as well.
Kelly Brook was on Big Breakfast, wasn't she?
Was she? Wow-wee. Any phobias?
Not really. I don't really like snakes. I might go to Australia in a few weeks.
Okay.
I might do just a little bit of time out. I went to Australia in pre-season with Villa back in the summer, and didn't really see any snakes or any spiders or anything. But I'm not really keen on snakes. But
no.
I wouldn't really call it a phobia.
Yeah,
as much,
I wouldn't.
No, not really.
Secret talents? Any hidden talents?
hidden talents. Don't know really.
You're not bad on the bike.
Yeah, I'm quite good at the bike.
He's heavy though. That's his only
problem.
That's
my problem. It's easier for you guys. They're a bit lighter.
Hills are your problem.
And where I live in Shropshire, mate.
Hills everywhere.
Honestly, it's a complete joke.
That's your enemy, isn't it?
Get on the track.
Yeah, there you go. You'll be a powerhouse on the track, mate.
That's what I want.
Right, final question, Neil Cutler, because this has been a world-class podcast, by the way. I've enjoyed this so much.
Yeah.
If you could live a day in the life of anybody alive right now, who would it be?
Brad Pitt.
Oh, I think that's the right answer.
What a guy.
Yeah.
He's just some guy, isn't he? Yeah. Imagine the life he's had. Imagine just living his life for like 10 years.
I would love to see his CV. I would love to see his CV.
What do you mean by that?
You know what I mean by that.
Who's the comedian, American guy? Pete Davidson.
Oh my God. Yeah, very good CV. Right, Kurtz, mate, that was world class. Thank you so much, mate. Absolutely buzzed off that. Tomasi, well done.
Thank you, well done.
And as always, up the Fosscast.
Up the Fosscast. You got to do that.
Oh, yeah, up the Fosscast.
Brilliant.
Thanks, everybody, for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Fosscast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Fosscast.